Before we get started, I want to say a big thank you to everyone who has stepped in through our Patreon site to support what Skirmish Play does, to kind of help our mission out, to help us do some unique things. That's made it possible for us to upgrade some of our equipment this year. We're really excited to take it out there. We did that over the summer, to take it out there, make some things happen this fall, some kind of unique things. And you guys with Patreon have really made that possible. We hope more folks will jump on board with us. Come on and support us. You can check it out at patreon.com/skirmishplay. Definitely want to, to have anybody who is, excited about what we're doing over here, excited about our mission, to jump in and come out and support us. So that's definitely a critical part of what we do. So thanks a lot, and enjoy the podcast.
This is Bart Isley. I'm here with Ryan Yeaman for the latest edition of the Skirmish Play podcast, and excited to be with you. First, we want to go ahead and say a big thank you to the SP Podcast's presenting sponsor, C&G Paving. If you want your paving or asphalt job done right the first time, you want C&G to knock it out. With 30 years of experience under owner Jeff Gray, this family-owned local business has been taking care of the roads, parking lots, and driveways across Central Virginia for decades. And with a 5-star rating on Facebook, you know they're going to get it right. Give them a call at 540-456-6179 today for a free estimate. And just want to say a big thank you to those guys. They've really kind of helped us keep this podcast rolling and give us a chance to really dive into some things in a different format than we usually are, with writing and video and that kind of thing. This really gives us a chance to kind of work through things and talk about things. And today, we had a big week last week, and today we want to talk about how that impacted the playoff picture in a big way, and give you an idea of where some of these teams are shaking out when it comes to the playoffs. So let's start with the biggest game of the week, the one that had all the hype, and then Louisa County left no doubt right out of the gate with a big win over Monticello.
Yeah, as far as the Jefferson District standings are sort of concerned, you can take Louisa and put them in a category over here, and then everybody else is playing for something else.
Yes.
They're that much more dominant on the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball than everybody else. I mean, they did what they did to Albemarle, and Albemarle's a good team. Monticello undefeated coming in. They do that. I mean, that first quarter, the game was over.
Yeah.
So that huge win for them, and one, when you look at the standings, that they sort of had to have. Even though 9-1 season would be great, we're looking at it, and maybe they have to run the table to give themselves a favorable advantage in a home game.
They have a very challenging region. In particular, it's very top-loaded. You have Dinwiddie. The VHSL released the playoff ratings today. This is Monday. And it starts in Region 4B with Dinwiddie. And then Monacan is very close behind them. And then Louisa is almost a full 2 points behind them at 3. And that tells you, number one, some of that stuff is strength of schedule, so the teams are picking up extra points. Louisa in the Jefferson District, gets the opportunity to play Almar and Orange, but they also play some teams that are not going to pick up a lot of wins. And that's not necessarily the case with the Dinwiddie or Monacan, because the Jefferson is a big district with 8 teams in it. So you have limited out-of-district games that you play. And Louisa played a challenging schedule, but some of those teams are having kind of weird years.
So they're Cortland is starting to come back up. That's good for them. As Albemarle keeps winning, that'll help them. They should get points out of this game with Orange if they win that. So they should be able to, if not cement maybe that third spot, hopefully move up. But
just
the big thing is
Dinwiddie or Monacan gets knocked off.
Can't slide down past 4. It's just
because the thing is while Dinwiddie and Monacan are very good, they got Eastern View sitting at 4 that is a pretty darn good football team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those 4 are really kind of the class of Region 4B. But you have some teams that are, they're not complete pushovers kind of up and down that region. And so I think that it's going to be just imperative for Louisa, and I think they understand that too, how big that Monticello game was, and then how big it is going to be for them to close. And they have, Orange this week, but they also have a Charlottesville game that's a big game. So a couple of different opportunities for them to continue to pile up some points.
Yeah, and I think that sort of explains the result of the contest. everything sort of lined up for Louisa. They're playing for Coach Fisher, field dedication beforehand. It's homecoming. Whole bunch of former football players coming in for that. I mean, that's the biggest crowd I've seen at a Louisa County game that never has a light crowd.
No.
So it was just the vibe around that one. Monticello just ran into a buzzsaw. And Louisa, you hear the players talking about it afterwards. They wanted to make a statement to this region, winning this game that way. And, I mean, if you look at the first quarter, they certainly did.
Yeah.
It's just there's no other way to cut it. And I think this is sort of the maturation of a team where, 2 years ago when most of these players first started, Joe Whalen's been there for 4 years, but most of the others, it's been 3 years. So 2015, that was a pretty good team, I think a 6-5 squad. They make the playoffs and then bounced out. And then last year, they come out really strong, get a little beat up, and run into a tough opponent in the first round. They get bounced out there. I think this year they're ready to take that next step and be something above it. I mean,
do you think that's the lineup, that's the mix that we'll see in the playoffs? That was a heavier dose of Joe Whalen this week, 187 on the ground for him. Was that just a little bit more of what you expect from the playoff version of the Lions?
I think a lot of Job's success was that they were running the ball on the edge, and that's just where he goes. And it's with Louisa, each running back sort of has its own purpose, and the way the matchup worked up, it was a night for Job. But I didn't see a great distance in terms of carries for Raekwon, for Malik Bell, any of those guys. I mean, David Sharp still getting a lot of touches too. And so it seems like it's going to be even distribution. But yeah, if you see something's working, you're going to go with it. And Job in the first drive was flying off the edge, so it was sort of his night. But yeah, I think having that depth, and then, if you see something working, that's the difference that this Louisa team has. It's just there's more there than there was last year, and so they're able to keep these guys healthier. And then obviously on the offensive and defensive line, they're just 1 year stronger in the weight room. They've got more depth in terms of rotating guys in and out, being able to spell guys out on defense, so they're not playing every snap both ways. It's just... yeah, the maturation of a team. This is what happens when you're good for a couple of years and you just keep adding and adding and adding.
And I think that kind of brings us to the flip side of that game, the loss for Monticello. Really not that bad a loss. Yeah, very frustrating to see the point spread, I'm sure, and how quickly Louisa kind of jumped on them and that they weren't able to kind of match that. But in the grand scheme of things, they're in a very similar situation to Louisa when it comes to the region, except that behind them, there's not that much. There's Easterview sitting there pushing Louisa, and you don't want to be in that four because you don't want to be facing whoever's number one at Monacan or Dinwiddie. Mm-hmm. But it looks like Monticello, as long as they can kind of hold serve here at the end of the year, is locked into that three spot in Region 3C. And like, Louisa staring up at Dinwiddie and Monacan, they're staring up at Heritage and Brookville. And I think that's, this again is a region that has some weird, it has a really weird back end. Fluvanna County is currently in playoff position with just two wins. The Flucos are seventh. That puts them in. And that's sitting at the bottom of that region. Waynesboro is down there and Liberty Bedford. And there are a lot of teams that are 17.4 below in the back half of that region. And Spotswood, who they beat soundly, is number four right behind them. So they got to, Monticello has to feel pretty good about where they are right now. They're probably looking at a second round game that's a challenge, whoever's in the two, and if they can hold on to that spot. But there's a chance that mathematically they move up or something.
And they have an opportunity to pick up quite a few more points because they're playing the 4A's going ahead. You got Powhatan coming up, you got Charlottesville coming up. Those are big games for them to sort of, if not cement, at least move themselves up. I mean, the big thing for Monticello is you just want to avoid the hangover. Yeah. It was a tough game, and it was really over in such a blur that there's not a whole lot to play for there. Second team did a real nice job of trying to set the energy for practice the next week. That they came out and really hustled. I know Coach Jeff Lloyd was happy with that. But yeah, they just need to get back. I mean, it's one game. It's a hiccup. It happens. It also happens to be the best team in the district. They were just primed. Louisa played the best football it has all year. And so if you're Monticello, you got to see that. That's unfortunate.
But you don't have to play them again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
and they're just well equipped to handle this too. I mean, you've got Kevin Gerald, who's just a great leader. You've got Haverstrom, who's there. You got Ayer. Like, they have a lot of the guys that can handle this, move on, and get moving forward again.
And that was a good thing to see out of the Louisa game, is that things didn't get chippy. And I thought that was impressive. A lot of those games, you see somebody just sort of randomly trying to run a dirty hit, pick a fight kind of thing, and things escalate. And I thought that was a key thing to see from really both these squads, too. Because you want to find out just how mature you're going to be in the playoffs, because that's when those 15-yard penalties are a killer.
Mm-hmm. No question about it. So that's where Region 3C shakes out right now, with Monticello at the 3, Fluvanna at 7. Western, if they can figure out a way to get back on track, there is a lot of room for Western to still be able to move up and make the playoffs. They're only 2 points out of the number 6 spot right now. Like, less than 2 points out of the number 6 spot.
You would not have guessed that a Western-Fluvanna matchup would be for a playoff spot.
It's big.
You would not have guessed that, yeah. It's start big. Of the season. It's crazy.
Yeah, and so a lot really kind of going on right now, and I think that it's key that everybody sort of, understand that now the playoff, everything's on the line right now. And I think that every win is going to really matter. Every win is going to be able to move you up. And I think that when you look around, there are, Charlottesville needs everything they can to kind of hang. They have a very difficult region with a ton of teams that are challenged. They're no lock yet. We saw that last year with them, where we thought they were out, and then they were not only in, but they were hosting.
Louisa playing.
Yeah, I mean, they're just the region. The 4A classification is really challenging. And then this region situation sets them up with the number of teams that they're used to seeing in the region. It seems to be sort of heavy loaded towards this side, whereas this would have been with another region last year. But Charlottesville sitting in the 5 slot. They're back behind EC Glass, Blacksburg, George Washington, and Salem. That's a lot of traditional powers right there. And a Glass team that's sitting up there that they barely lost.
2-point conversion away in overtime from winning that game.
Yeah. I mean, it's a whole different ballgame. So Charlottesville has to feel pretty good about where they are, but they have a dogfight ahead of them to kind of hold on to those spots.
Yeah, and the story of the JD has sort of been played out interestingly. Louisa sort of establishes itself, and then it's Albemarle's front-loaded schedule. How's that play out? Then yeah. Monticello gets involved. And now it's sort of Charlottesville's turn to have its effect on the top end of the standings. We'll see that. I mean, they still have Louisa coming up in a couple weeks, and that's a huge game for both those teams. I mean, there's a lot of points on the line in that one. So Charlottesville going ahead, I think, is sort of the team to watch. I mean, they played Albemarle really well. I mean, right now that's looking like the most exciting game of the year so far. It's going to be pretty hard to top that one.
It's a heck of a football game. I got a chance to be at that one, and you got to give a last-second field goal. That's about as good as it gets. It was also just a tremendous sequence for Albemarle when they kind of looked like they were on their heels a little bit. Every time, though, that Charlottesville struck, Jaquan Anderson answered.
Yeah, you got the dueling banjos.
Yeah, him versus Sabias in the second half. It was pretty awesome to watch. Sort of reminded me, very different positions and different styles, but a few years ago there was the Charlottesville Western game where you had
Rashad Davis
and you had Ken Henry going at it. So when you get that sort of dynamic in the second half, it's a lot of fun and fun to see two guys at sort of the top of their game and playing really well. But a great sequence for Albemarle. The big stop by Eric Taylor, and then they turn around and they drive it down and just milk the clock, and then 0.5 seconds left, call the timeout and kick the field goal and win. I mean, just Albemarle, we saw very early in the year with them against Mountain View that they have a knack for winning close games. That was a lot of what was happening last year. Anderson would pull these sort of magician-type situations out of a hat. So fun to see them get that mojo back a little bit against Charlottesville. And not a bad loss for Charlottesville by any means.
And then with Charlottesville, you look at the season that they've had. They've played in so many close games. I think you have to love that as a coach. Is that your kids are just used to that environment.
Their losses are close. I mean, it's like 5 total points or whatever. I mean, like 3 or 4 points. So, yeah, I mean, and they've been in tough ones. They've been in the Harrisonburg game that was really tough. And they had that crazy wild one with Orange. So Charlottesville is battle-tested. That could really pay off for them in the playoffs. Looking at Albemarle in the playoffs, right now they're rapidly moving up. in a difficult region. And right now they're sitting at number 5 in Region 5D. Ahead of them is Stafford, North Stafford, Brookpoint, Harrisonburg. Harrisonburg's kind of the interesting one to me. They lost to Charlottesville earlier this year. So I think there's a chance that maybe Almar can continue to slot and move up, and maybe they get into that 4 slot and host a game. The top part of that, I don't know if Stafford, North Stafford, Brookpoint, traditionally they play each other during the regular season. I don't know if they've gotten a chance to beat up on each other yet. So maybe one of those starts to slip down, or they beat up on each other enough that Almar can slip in there.
And the other guy in there is Mountain View behind Albemarle at 8 that they played earlier and they beat.
And you got Massaponix sitting there floating around. I mean, that's the old Commonwealth District is in the Region 5D with a dash of Orange and Harrisonburg thrown in there.
Yeah, I mean, if you're an Albemarle fan, you've got your Mountain View Wildcats gear on. Like, you're just rooting for them to win as many games as possible.
No question.
The way that their schedule worked out, it was all up front. And they should be able to – logistically, they should be able to finish at 6-4.
And Orange County looks like they're in pretty good shape right now. I mean, if they can go, obviously a very tough task with Louisa this week, but if they can pick up another couple of wins, hey, I mean, like, Orange is feeling pretty good about where they are, and I think that they, you know, can be in that playoff mix in a very tough region. So Orange has got to be feeling pretty good about things, especially if some of these other teams start to beat up on each other a little bit. I think that, you know, that kind of takes us through most of the Jefferson District teams and gives you an idea of where they stand. William Monroe is fighting it out in Region 3B. That win over Brentsville would have been huge for them. It's a real heartbreaker for them in the 7-6 loss. But if they had been able to get that one, I think that they jump up and they're probably in playoff position, frankly, this week. But they've got their work cut out for them going forward. They're at 11th in the top 8, kind of get in. And then down in Region 2A, Goochland continues to sit in the number 2 spot, and they seem to have that sort of locked down. You know, who knows mathematically whether they could move up above Pocosin, but certainly right now Goochland is in really good shape to essentially be hosting several games.
They're in cruise control right now, and they'll slide up as Buckingham starts to win more games. That'll help them, hopefully. I don't know if you can take over that top spot. It's just
a tough one.
But Goochland's in cruise control. They're not going to slide down.
Madison is sitting a little bit outside the playoff picture, but there is room for them to move up in Region 2B if they can kind of pull things together and get a couple of wins. Such a young team. You know, for them to already have 2 wins is a pretty solid campaign, frankly.
They got something to build on.
Yeah, definitely. Buckingham is maybe the one that you feel like is going to be the fast riser here to finish this year.
Their schedule was all up front. You know, they had Appomattox and Goochland in the first 4 or 5 games.
That's a lot. Fork Union can tell you that's not a super fun couple of squads to have on your schedule.
No, and so the way it is now, you know, Cumberland, they just destroyed them last week at 84 points or something in that one.
A lot of points. That's their rival right there, too.
Yeah. So, you know, they had a bye week going into that, a week to get healthy, and they felt that they had improved in every game that they played in. They didn't look that bad against Goochland. Mm-hmm. So watching them going ahead, they have some of their traditional rivals. Randolph-Henry, that's a team that they traditionally beat. Prince Edward, same thing.
Randolph-Henry is 0-for right now. They play Goochland this week, which is a tough matchup.
So, I mean, Buckingham has an opportunity to win out and finish their season on a strong note and make the playoffs. And once you get in here, you never know. Especially the 2A level, we've seen some really interesting games in those first couple rounds.
No question. So, that takes us through sort of the basics of the playoff picture. We got the power ratings up on the website. You can check those out for sure. Obviously, if you've found this podcast, you're probably already at the website, so you probably already found them anyway. But anyway, those are on the site. You can check them out and kind of dig into the nitty-gritty of everything that's going on. So that brings us to the awards segment. And let's start, like we like to, with the lineman of the week, the CNG Road Grader of the Week. And, you know, it was very clear when we started talking about this that you had one guy in mind for this one.
Yeah, I mean, Tony Thurston's play on the defensive and offensive line last week was just, I mean, it was so impactful. I mean, I don't know which one was more impactful because he was that good defensively. I mean, he really got in Kevin Gerald's kitchen sink. Like, he really messed around and forced him out of the pocket. I mean, I think everything sort of played out into Luis's hands perfectly, the penetration they got up front. And you could see the respect that Monticello had for Luis's defensive line when in the third quarter they're lining up in these splits where the A gaps and B gaps are absolutely enormous, and then they're running sort of bootleg plays and just giving up that section of the field, saying, you can have it. You don't see that all too often, and I think that's the ultimate sign of respect. But when you look at what they were able to do, they had over 500 yards on the ground, and all the stuff they were running off the edge to Tony's side. And he was just
563 rushing yards on 56 carries,
and almost all of that in the first half.
Wow!
I mean, they had a pretty good third quarter before they put their second stringers in, but yeah, he just, I mean, and against a Monticello defense that had really come a long ways and been playing well, that's saying something. I mean, to do it on both sides of the ball like that, that's big time players making big time plays kind of thing. And I think that was, Thurston's had some really good games, but that's the best one I've seen from him.
Thurston, he's a very big dude.
He's athletic though.
He can, but he moves really, really well. You don't hear Mark Fisher toss around.
He doesn't work in hyperboles.
Yeah, but he talks about Thurston maybe being, the best two-way player that he's coached. I mean, he's that kind of guy. You could build an offense around him and work a defense around him. And, they have great players. There's no question about it. Brandon Smith, Malik Belt, Joe Boylan, these guys are great. But some of the reason that these guys are what they are is because Tony Thurston is doing a ton of dirty work in front of them.
Yeah, and he's really energetic about it. He's fired up. You can see he's happy to be out there doing those jobs. And I think that's really inspiring for a lot of skill position guys and everything. They want to be good for this offensive line. And it's not just him. I mean, they've got a lot of guys, whether it's Sean Brown at center. I mean, this is a really good unit. But when it has a leader like that, it just takes it to another level.
Yeah, I think that's a good point about Louisa in general. They have the leadership this year. I think that those guys, I mean, Brandon Smith sets an incredible tone. Everything we've seen about him is he watches a ton of film and he puts in that kind of time. Thurston just does everything sort of the right way all the time. Raquan Jones is fun. I mean, that guy just does his job.
And
Jared Hunter can step in and just do his job. I mean, when you have guys who want to just do their job, that makes a huge difference.
I mean, that's why they talk about the buy-in. If you can get everybody to buy in, we'll be just fine. And that's what's happening out in Mineral.
Yeah. So, CNG, road grader of the week, Tony Thurston from Louisa County. He's one that I think if we had been putting together a preseason watch list for road grader of the week, that guy would have been at the top of the list.
Absolutely.
So, certainly deserving of the award. Offensive player of the week, I think it's probably got to go to Luke Wilson of Fork Union, but Jaquan Anderson, a heck of a performance too. Those two guys both were just absolutely tremendous.
Yeah, and I think the big thing for them is those are both must-win games. Fork Union, if they want to stay in the playoff hunt, they have to win out, basically. And then Albemarle, that's a big game against Charlottesville. They lose that. I mean, maybe based on what we've seen on the Sandys, maybe they don't slide all that much, but it just makes their case, a campaign for a home playoff game, that much more realistic. And so the best players on those two teams coming out and having big ones. I mean, you look at Anderson's rushing totals. I mean,
Jaquan Anderson, 327 rushing yards and 4 touchdowns. I mean, he was not just, I think it was a Monticello player. I think Garrett Porterfield called him 90% of the offense for Albemarle.
That's the thing. It's coming.
Yeah. So. He was more like 98, 99. I mean, it was pretty tremendous. They got really great performance from Brock Short. Heck of a performance from him, over 100 yards. He particularly had a huge run in the fourth quarter that set him up to get that field goal. So it wasn't just Jaquan Anderson, but a lot of it was Jaquan Anderson. I mean, he, like you said, you know it's coming. A lot of times they're not messing around with misdirection. Maybe they're running a guy through faking a jet sweep, but mostly you know that Jaquan Anderson is getting moving. He's going downhill behind an offensive line that is really good and is coming around now and playing a little bit better, and they're playing, opponents that are not as many world beaters as they were early in the year. And, they're getting the ball moving. But Luke Wilson, 18 for 29, 401 yards, 9 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Like half his completions are touchdowns. That's crazy. And not only that, he's getting it done playing that sort of that what you want from every quarterback, which is whoever's open, they get the ball. Five different players caught touchdowns in those 9 touchdowns. I mean, that's crazy in high school to just find 5 guys who can catch touchdowns. But ISF Apuali, Malcolm Mays, I mean, they had Logan Justice, Will Stupaski, and Larry Elder all caught touchdowns. Heck of a performance by Luke Wilson.
Yeah, and it's one coming off of the St. Christopher's loss that, you know, they really – this team really needed a step forward. Coach Hooper was looking for this team to sort of establish the identity that they had in some of the close losses. You know, when they lose to Appomattox, they felt really good about the way they played. And then to sort of take a step backwards against St. Chris, are like, oh, okay, now we got to hit the reset button. Well, 9 touchdowns will do that for you. I mean, they got to come out of that feeling really good. And now they got to do it against Collegiate.
Very tough matchup game, for them. No question about it. But
if they play like that,
if you walk into a game and you've thrown for 401, you've thrown for 9 touchdowns the week before, your confidence is going to be at an all-time high. And I don't think Collegiate is unbeatable by any stretch. They've got freshmen playing big roles. The Ballot kid is playing a lot of linebacker for them. They've got some tough matchups on the outside, though. But Fork Union is the kind of team that can athletically match up with an Allende Bud that Western had a lot of trouble with earlier in the year. T. Brewer's going to throw the ball around a lot. Maybe that plays into their hands. They throw enough guys out there. They had some picks. They had a bunch of picks against Trinity Episcopal, too. So if that Fork Union defense can come up with some picks and put the ball in Luke Wilson's hands, they're going to be in
pretty good
shape.
Defense has been pretty good most of the season. I mean, the big thing is keeping Wilson protected. If he has time, if the offensive line does their job up front, Fork Union usually plays really well.
Yeah.
And it's pretty clear that unit had it together last week.
Absolutely. So that's offensive player of the week. Defensive player of the week, two guys – very different kinds of games, but a doubleheader of middle linebackers for this one. Let's start with Eric Taylor, who's in it mostly for one big play. A fourth down stop of Sam Neill that gave Almore the ball back and gave him a chance to win.
Yeah, I mean, every good game needs one of those plays. And sometimes it comes from the veteran leader that you'd expect. I mean, last year it would be like a Zykel Foster for them. Yeah. But this year, this play, Eric Taylor comes up and gets the job done.
Eric Taylor, he's stepped in and sort of that – I guess it's a Tayshaun Massey type role for them, and he is the same guy every single week. They know what they're going to get out of him. A guy plays really hard. Brent Isaiah, the Albemarle coach, pointed out that he has played sick. He's played through whatever. He just does what they ask him to do. Eric Taylor just shows up, and I think they got a feel that Neil was going to pull the ball out. Sabias had been just carrying the ball a lot, and it wasn't slowing down by any means, but it certainly seemed like a situation, at least to Almar, that this was where Neil was going to pull it out and try and slip through and get a couple of yards on the outside. And I think it was Pfeiffer got to him, or you know, one of the other linebackers got to him first, and then Taylor came in and cleaned him up. So a pretty tremendous performance on that single play by him. And then the other middle linebacker that stood out, Blue Ridge's Aiden Britton, 10 tackles and a fumble recovery, I believe, in that one. Blue Ridge's offense came out kind of – they were fine, no question about it. They had a quick touchdown, and they were kind of going. But then things kind of got out of sync with some penalties and stuff. But the defense kept stepping up. Two big red zone stops in the first half that kept Randolph making scoreless. 10 tackles, and Aiden Britton was a big part of it. The guy flies into the hole. Blue Ridge is at its best when they're attacking, when they're bringing 4 or 5 dudes and they're coming up through. And Britton seems to be that guy who, when they bring 4 or 5 guys, he breaks through and makes the big play. So a really strong performance by him.
Yeah, I mean, I got to see him play really well against Covenant, and he's one of those guys on that defense that when he flies in, he makes a difference. Good tackler. I mean, he's just got a nose for a ball. Yeah. That's what you sort of want to see from your linebackers, especially on the edge, like where he plays.
And with the graduation of like Jalil Puryear, they needed a guy like that who was always kind of sticking his nose and was always kind of around the ball. And Aiden Britton has filled that role really nicely. So defensive player of the week to those two guys, heck of a performance. And that leads us into this next week where we get to see, you know, this is not the sort of marquee glamour week that we had last week.
It's a different week.
It's a different week, yeah. But some really key matchups for teams that, you know, want, you know, this these become the matchups that maybe decide the direction of your season in some ways. And I think that starts with, we just talked about them, but starts with Fork Union against Collegiate.
Yeah, Fuma's going to have to go out there and find a way to, I don't know, stop the spread look that Collegiate throws at you. Last year, this game was fairly close early on, going into the third quarter kind of thing, and then Collegiate just pulled away really strong. Fork Union has the tools to do this. It's just a matter of actually getting it done. I think that they have the depth at receiver. They have the quarterback. You've got, I mean, between Iosefa Puali and R.C. Walbrock, you have a great running back core there. It's just finding a way to make those tools work. And it's not like Collegiate's defense has been impenetrable. You know, so hopefully Fork Union got some game tape from Woodbury, and they can sort of try and figure out what they should do. But yeah, that's, if they get that, that's a huge one for them. You know, they're on the outside of that playoff picture, and I know that they like to get back. You know, it's been a while for Fork Union. 2012, there's that state final run that they made. So see if they can try and make things interesting here these last couple weeks.
The other one that becomes a big one is Covenant versus Stab. The Eagles and Saints always traditionally match up here right around this time of year, and Covenant, I think, has pulled it off once in the series. They've done it, you know, and I think that, you know, it vaulted them in. Just a tremendous year that Covenant had that year. And right now, you know, Covenant coming off the bye has looked really good, but then it kind of stumbled against, you know, Blue Ridge, where they kind of got into a little bit of trouble, but they bounced back, and now they're kind of back in, you know, into a groove. So I think Covenant has to feel pretty good. A lot of the times it's been tough for Covenant to close in a year, and I think that staying healthy has always been a big part of that. And so hopefully they've kind of maintained that health. They've kind of kept that wear and tear off some of these guys, and they had a great time to have a bye week, certainly for them. And I think that maybe if they've gotten a chance to get healthy, they can come in and get a win against Stab under the lights. That's a big ball game. And you know what you're going to see from Covenant. You're going to see a lot of option football. Stab has been a little bit all over the map this year, but
hard to know what they are.
I think there's an unpredictability to Stab that makes them dangerous right now. And Chase Emmerich, though, has been very good at quarterback at times. He's very good at running the ball, taking care of business, but they're coming in off a loss, or they're coming in off a bye as well, but a loss right before the bye in Nansman-Suffolk. So, a big challenge for both these teams, and this kind of helps determine, you know, where they're headed. Stab's really not that far out of the playoff picture right now. Covenant is only one spot out of the playoff picture. This is a big one.
Yeah, and just to sort of bring it up, in 2012, that was the year that John Blake hates hearing this, but that's the year they went winless. But in that game against Covenant, Stab is an extra point away from winning it. Mm-hmm. And so that was a year that Covenant was, I mean, everybody thought Covenant was going to win that game and win it big, and Stab still came out and almost won it. Yeah. In this one, you look at Covenant, maybe they're heavily favored again. I don't know how heavily, but Stab's going to come out and give them a match, because there's just so much pride on the line for them in this one. That's something they really enjoy, is these two teams getting together. They just, both sides want to win so badly. So even if there is some disparity, maybe you know, Covenant right now has a deeper roster. Even if there is that disparity, I think you're going to get, Stab's going to come out and give it their best shake.
And it's not as, it doesn't look on paper as that even of a matchup with Louisa County and Orange, but every time these two teams play, it's going to be fun. A true border war, similar to Madison versus William Monroe. Louisa and Orange lock it up in the Battle of the Gordonsville Tasty Freeze. This is a big one. Always a lot of fun. And Orange gets them at home. You know, maybe this becomes a trap game. I don't know. I think maybe you're stretching it a little bit to make it work. But Louisa looks like they're just rolling. They know what's on the line. They know they need to go 10-0. I don't expect Louisa to let down in this one. But Orange has the offense that can make things a little bit tricky.
Yeah, and so Monticello wasn't able to get things going in the air against Louisa. And a lot of that was pressure. There's just too much pressure. You don't have the time to set up. And your receiver can't even set up his route. Against, with Orange County, these guys are lightning quick. I think it's the best receiving core in the Jefferson District. Kenyon Carter's a very mobile quarterback, so maybe he can slip out. But I don't know that he's that much more mobile than Kevin Jarrell.
Nah.
So, yeah, if you're Orange County, you're looking at that Monticello tape, and you're watching it and you're just trying to figure out, okay, what do we do?
Yeah.
So they have, I mean, they can make this interesting. The big thing for them will be trying to hold up defensively against that run. Cause Louisa is just really just hammering it down everyone's throats, and Orange, while they had the big playability, they have to avoid getting worn down on the other side of the ball from those, you know, 7-8 minute drives.
No question about it. So that kind of sums it up. This is an interesting week where some teams maybe get to determine their future and kind of do it. You know, like I said, not the, maybe the marquee matchups of last week, but a big week, as they always are when you're only playing 10 games. They definitely are. So definitely tune in and check out what's going on. We've got a ton of stuff up on the website right now. And we're moving in, starting to move into that playoff picture for a lot of different sports.
3 weeks left, yep.
Yeah, so certainly check it out, and we appreciate you listening, and we'll be back with you next week.